Today is Sunday, 23rd May 2020. We will be continuing from where we stopped, the essential Dhamma of Lord Buddha. We are at page 18, the question and answer section. Question and answer section 3. Question 1 is by Brother Danny of Klang. Brother Danny is the brother of Susan. From Klang also. So the question is on the development of the five spiritual faculties. The second one is virya, or he call it effort. Then according to Brother Danny, he said, I was told once that during meditation, sometimes you come across a lot of discomfort, ease and unease, terribly uncomfortable, very tough. I was told that this spiritual faculty of virya, which he termed as effort, require us to get to grit our teeth and try to force it through. What is Bratio's comment on this? So that was the question. Huh? So my answer to him is very interesting. Huh? You should listen. Yeah, a lot of people are not clear about these spiritual faculties, especially Sadha, Virya, Sati, Samadhi, and Panyas. Then here, the question is how to apply Virya. So they thought this is what is being taught. So my answer was, I said, it's a good question because many people got trapped in this situation. Regarding this spiritual zeal or virya, I call it spiritual zeal because it's a virya. The Pali word is virya. And many people who read the English translation will get it wrong because it is commonly translated as effort. Yeah. Virya, in fact, has nothing to do with effort. The right effort is actually stated under the Noble Eightfold Path factor of right effort. And in Pali, it's called Samavayama. It is not called Virya. So a lot of people are confused because of the English translation. Whereas Virya is a spiritual zeal or spiritual tenacity to walk this Dhamma way. And it is not an effort. Effort is thought-based because to arise an effort is an intent or intention by the thought. Who wants to apply effort? The thought wants to apply effort. That's why it's thought-based. And the Buddha knew, that's why under Noble Eightfold Path, he taught the four right effort. The mind determines through four right effort to do certain things. Thought-based purification. So according to the Buddha, he taught the four right effort. That is the reason why the Buddha taught this four right effort under the Noble Eightfold Path. Because this is thought-based. And you have to start from thought base. Well, most people are only familiar with the instrument of thought. They have not developed the meditation to realize the state of mind that is beyond thought, beyond mind, the silent mind in pure awareness. So I will explain the four right effort. Under the teaching, what is the first right effort? The first right effort is the right effort to abandon the unwholesome thought that has arisen. That's the reason why it is thought-based. The second right effort is the right effort to prevent the unarisen, unwholesome thought from arising. Then the third right effort is the right effort to promote the virtue in the form of right thought, right speech, right action, and right livelihood that are still not in you. That's how you can develop more and more wholesomeness. contentment, gentleness, pleasantness, simplicity, honesty, gratitude, and respect. All these are very virtuous and wholesome. That is how you cultivate all the right and appropriate thought, or cultivate wholesomeness wherever there is condition. Then the last right effort is the right effort to refine upon and perfect all this, all those virtues that you have started to develop. So these are the four right efforts, which are still thought-based, as taught by the Buddha, where it has a lot to do with the thought. When it comes to spiritual faculty, it is termed virya in Pali. So virya is not vayama. It is different. Virya is a spiritual zeal, a spiritual tenacity to walk this Dhamma way, to follow the advice of the Buddha to cultivate accordingly. How does virya come to be? It comes about via an understanding, and because it's a spiritual zeal, a spiritual tenacity, which is a driving force, there is an energy involved. And this energy is not a thought. Your heart wants to do it because you know this is important. You see the importance of this cultivation, this meditative training. So when it comes to virya, you have to reflect and contemplate clearly into the teachings, the Buddha Dharma. There is a reason why we chant the salutation to the Buddha. We have to develop understanding of who the Buddha is and how unique he is. From our chanting of the salutation to the Buddha, Ittipeso Bhagava Arahang, etc., the nine great virtues of the Buddha can be understood. We will come to realize that the Buddha is the fully enlightened one. He is not only enlightened, but fully enlightened. And because he is fully enlightened, he has nine great, very, very special virtues. So the nine great virtues are such indeed is the blessed one. He is the blessed one. He is the worthy one. And he is the fully enlightened one, etc. So blessed with what? He is blessed with virtue and wisdom. He is the wisest and the most virtuous living being ever to be born during his time in the entire universe. Wisdom-wise, he is above even the devas, the brahmas, and all other beings. Then we chant homage to the blessed one, the worthy one, where he is an arahant, and he is also the fully enlightened one. And he is worthy of respect, reverential salutation, offering, hospitality, and gift. So these are the first three great virtues that you have come across in the teaching. And he is also the teacher of man and God. He can teach anybody. He is a guide incomparable. That's why all these are his great virtue. And to have such a great being to be your teacher and your guide, you will have a lot of faith and respect for him, gratitude towards him. That's how your faith, saddha, in him can be strengthened, can become very strong, and finally unshakable. Then you come to the Dhamma, salutation to the Dhamma, where we chant, Swakato Bhagavata Dhammo, etc. Then you come to realize that this Dhamma is so unique, so special, that there is no need to wait until death for you to realize it. It can be realized in the here and the now, each by the wise, and they will stand up to investigation. It is also something that can awaken you, liberate you, and make you enlightened so that you can be free from all suffering. If you come to know that this Dhamma is so powerful and so fantastic, then what must you do? Or what are you waiting for? For me, when I came to understand this in 1971, there was no turning back. Because this is so important to me. It not only involved my present life, But my entire existence and future life, everything depends on this understanding. If I cannot have this understanding, then why must I come to this world to suffer? That's why I will have the spiritual zeal based on the understanding to go all out to cultivate and develop this understanding of the Buddha Dharma and all this essential Dharma so that I can move on. That's how the virya comes about. When you see the importance of cultivating this meditation via this training of the mind to be mindful and heedful, virya will arise. Then you will never be sleepy anymore. You will endure and you will persevere even when you are experiencing extreme discomfort or pain or whatever difficulty that arises. Just like what the Buddha determined underneath the Bodhi tree before his enlightenment. He said, even until the blood dries up, I will not arise from this seat unless he developed the enlightenment. That resolve and determination is so strong. All these are part and parcel of cultivation's understanding and the development of that spiritual zeal, or we call virya. Then even in the Sabbasavak Sutta, it's also mentioned, things that you need to endure, you endure, like your bad bodily condition of pain, sickness, disease, etc. So the understanding is when your body is sick, do not allow your mind also to be sick. When there is a sensation of itchiness, pain, or whatever due to insect bite, and etc., you also have to endure because the condition is such. All these are part and parcel of understanding the teaching. Then this virya will become very strong and it will drive you to cultivate. That's how you can develop. Sorry, that's how you can determine to pay respect to the Buddha and vow to develop the spiritual faculties to understand his teaching. You will then develop sati, stabilize it. You will do all the puja offering as advice. You will chant all the pre-puja and salutation to the triple gem, etc. You will renew your precept. You will develop the understanding of the essential Dhamma. Then you will cultivate. We are putting it into practice. That's how virya can actually transform you and help you to develop your cultivation. What they have told you to do about clenching your teeth and or greed determined to see it through, etc., very likely they just read about it from the Dhamma book and interpreted it wrongly to you. Because in the text, the Buddha did give advice when he taught the monk the five ways to overcome unwholesome thought. But that is a different teaching. So what are these five ways of overcoming unwholesome thought? So out of the five ways, the first two is also thought-based. The last one is, of course, really through your self-determination. Because he said, the Buddha, according to the Buddha, after he has taught you the meditative way, the third and fourth way, and the first two thought-based, if you cannot do it, then finally he said, you have to do it on your own. It's through sheer greed and determination. You have to abandon it. So I will explain the five ways to overcome unwholesome thought so that you can go through it with me as a revision. According to Lord Buddha, when unwholesome thought arise, like there is an angry thought, there is a selfish thought, there is a fearful thought, or there is this emotional thought, insecurity, anxiety, sorrow, lamentation, or resentment, jealousy, envy, all these are unwholesome thoughts. Even lust, craving, these are all unwholesome thoughts with the evil roots, the three evil roots. So he said the first right effort is to think of the opposite direct wholesome thought. When you have wholesome thought, you cannot think of the negative thought. It's just like when you have anger, you reverse it and radiate metta, loving kindness. When there is metta, when you wish yourself well-being and happiness, you cannot have anger anymore unless you attach and cling on to that thought. Then you are not being mindful. You are only verbalizing it like a parrot. The anger is still there. But if you really have this understanding, when you reflect and contemplate on the direct opposite wholesome thought, then the negative thought cannot arise. But because of your delusion, you haven't rooted it out as yet. So this first way is just a temporary solution to overcome unwholesome thought. The moment you stop radiating metta, the memory will recall, then you will get angry again and become unhappy all over again. That's why the Buddha knows you cannot do it. If it cannot help you root it out permanently, then the Buddha asks you to go for the second way via contemplation. The second way is to reflect and think of the consequence or danger of holding on to that wrong thought which has the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. So this wrong thought can be anger, fear, worry, and anxiety. Because all these are evil roots, roots of all evil. Hence, it will make you evil, especially your anger and your hatred. It will cause you to think very negatively. From there, it is capable of making you violent. Do you want to live that type of life? It is your life. You have to decide. If I know it's an evil root and can bring about karmic downfall to my life, negativity of karma to my life, then I know I will have to confront the fruit of it later on. Then I will never do it because I cherish my life more. I do not want to fall into negativity. I do not want to violate the precepts. I do not want to hold on to those evil roots that it will make me evil. And an evil person is capable of a lot of negative things that violates the moral code of karma. And this will bring about downfall in your life. Like the Buddha said, you are born of your karma, heir to your karma, conditioned and supported by your karma. You are what you are because of your karma. So if you don't take care of karma, your life will surely become miserable. When you reflect on this, the consequence of holding on, the consequence and danger of holding on to all this wrong thought, you will definitely determine to abandon it. All this you can use thought because they are thought-based skillful means to help tackle problem temporarily, but they are not permanent solution. So the first two ways is still using thought. Think of the direct opposite wholesome thought is still thought-based. Think of the consequent is still thought-based. Whereas the third way is meditative. It's very different. So when you go and develop the meditative understanding, then it is different. So this third way is the best, where it is the meditative way. The Buddha said we don't have to fight anger. We don't have to fight the wrong thought or negative thought of fear, worry, anxiety, etc., even lust, craving, and delusion. What you need to do is just silence your mind and maintain awareness. All this is meditation. That's why when I teach meditation, I teach you how to develop silence. Silence your mind. Relax, maintain awareness, and just silence. Don't do anything. What you need to do is just silence your mind, maintain awareness, and just be aware. Then what happens? Everything will cease to be, because everything is condition arising, cause of the normal. Anger was never there, because before you get angry, it was peaceful. Fear was never there before you get fearful. And all those negativity of mind state, they are not inherent within your intrinsic nature. Your original mind is stillness, tranquility, silent, and peaceful. There is no movement inside there. There is nothing. Just like what Hui Ning, the sixth patriarch, said in his poem, 本来无一物何处惹尘埃。So, 本来无一物 means originally there was nothing. Well, that is the true mind. The true mind is just aware, unconditioned, no word, no concept, nothing, no mundane aggregates. Then how can the dust alight? 何处惹尘埃? So this understanding is meditation. If you understand that the true mind, which is your silent mind, is the meditative mind, and originally there was nothing, then how can the dust alight? Or arise. Well, if you don't create, there is nothing. If you don't have wrong view to stir your mundane mind, to react and make yourself angry, fearful, miserable, that's mind state, negativity of mind state, or unwholesome thought will not arise. Anger is not you, because when anger arises and passes away and ceases, you never die. So how can anger be you? Why do you want to worry about anger? You have to understand that they are not inherent in you. It is not you, but it has arisen in the form and mind via your self-delusion and wrong view. That's why mindfulness of content of consciousness, citta, can make you aware of this. When the content of consciousness have anger, has greed, you must be aware. And this citta has been conditioned into negativity. Your mind is no longer in its original state of stillness with inner awareness. Your mind has stirred. Just like feeling, when it arises upon contact, when feeling is no more pure feeling, it means you have delusion, unwise attention, or ayoniso manasikara at the moment of sense contact. You do not have wisdom or wise attention, yoniso manasikara at the moment of sense experience. That's why your feeling immediately become craving. Cravings are your like and dislike, and pleasant and unpleasant sensation, which are your positive and negative craving. It is also called the mental hindrance of sensual desire and evil. So under Vedana Nupassana, the Buddha said when feeling has transformed into pleasant or unpleasant or neutral feeling, you must be aware. What does he mean by aware? With awareness, you can trace the origination factor. How does the unarisen mental hindrance like sensual desire and ill will, or pleasant and unpleasant sensation or feeling comes to be? You will come to understand clearly how the unarisen mental hindrance, how the evil roots come to be. When you silence your mind, you will come to know how they cease to be, how the arisen mental hindrance or defilement or evil roots cease to be. That is how you meditate. Only then can you develop the wisdom. Then you can go on to develop the fourth way to overcome unwholesome thought. Because the third way can only allow you to be peaceful in formal meditation. But when you come out into life and society, you will come to realize again that your views are still wrong views. You still have delusion and have not straightened your view, and you still react as before. Your mind will stir and you will still become angry and fearful. That's why living beings or cultivators never really change or transform despite the so-called meditation. So the third way is effective only temporarily, where it does not bring about wisdom to root it out, to root out your delusion, your ignorance. It is just a temporary solution to calm down the restless mind, the agitated mind, and all the other negativity of mind state. You cannot rely on this way. That is why you need to move on to the fourth way. The fourth way is Dhammanupassana cultivation. The Buddha said, you have to trace the origination factor before anger or fear arise. It was not there. Then how does it come to be? You have to develop mindfulness of Dhamma under Dhammanupassana. That is mindfulness of the six internal sense bases and the six external sense bases. Then you will come to realize that all this negativity of mind state arise through your sense door consciousness. It arises through one of the senses. Upon contact, either when you are seeing something, then due to your wrong view, you react and stir your mind and get yourself becoming emotional or angry. Or when you hear something abusive or something that you do not like, then again, you stir your mind and you react to it. Or when you hear some bad news, then you develop fear, worry, anxiety. All this come about through your reaction of mind, born of your wrong view, your conditioning. Then you will come to realize how all these mental states come to be. Then you continue to be silent, miss. With the meditative mind, the silent mind, in awareness, you will come to understand how it ceases to be. Ceases to be means when you do not give it any more meaning, when you do not try to do anything by creating more thinking or feed it with any more thought energy, then all of your negativity of mind state like anger, fear, worry, anxiety, insecurity, they will return to its original state of stillness before the stirring, where these are all conditioned arising mental state entity. If your mind do not stir, it does not arise. So the condition behind the arising is delusion, wrong view. So if you decide to silence your mind and not to think and not to do anything, not to reason, not to analyze, not to justify, not to do anything, what happened? The condition that support all this negativity of mind state, they will cease to be. Because when you don't think, there is no more wrong thought. When you don't want to do anything, the mind will just slow down, settle down, then return to its original state before the stirring. before the conditioning. So all this is wisdomly understanding. That's why by silencing your mind, maintain awareness, and not doing anything, all this dependent originating mind state or negativity of mind state, they will slow down and cease to be. Then when you realize that true mind, which is stillness, tranquility, you will understand what meditation is. So meditation is just to train your mind to be aware. Maintain awareness to realize your true mind. Your true mind is the mind that is before the thinking, the thought process, the mundane stirring. So without conditioning, without wrong view, without ignorance, there is no mental activity. Without mental activity, there is peace, there is tranquility, there is stillness. That nature is just aware. So that's how you meditate. So I will read on. If you just silent and maintain awareness within, then all this will cease. That's how you develop the wisdom. Then you will come to understand a very profound understanding. Then you can reflect, contemplate. It's just like swimming. The original state of this body of ours is buoyancy, where we are lighter than water. It will return to its original state of buoyancy if you do not struggle or panic. But just silent and let things be. Similarly, the mind is the same. It will become peaceful again. The next time when you get angry, just maintain the awareness, silence everything, and relax your body and mind. No need to do anything. Do you know what will happen? You will come to a realization that your agitation, the anger, the mental movement inside has started to slow down. Then all of a sudden, stillness will arise. And the mind is like nothing inside that. Then you will come to realize we are saying, hey, that is real meditation. I don't have to do anything. I just silence my mind. That's why silence is the real meditation. The moment you are silent and without thought, you will understand that all these are conditions arising, mind state. They were never you, means all this wrong thought. They are all impermanent, dependent originating, condition arising. They come and they go. And when it arises and pass away, you are still around. You never die. So how can anger be you? So anger was never you. That's why anger is condition arising. Similarly, the aggregates of mind, they are never you. Feeling come and go, and you didn't die. Perception come and go, and you didn't die. Activity of mind, or your thought, come and go, and you didn't die. Consciousness arise and pass away, come and go. Again, you didn't die. So how come you still continue to deludedly cling and say feeling, which can be pleasant or unpleasant or painful feeling, is me? Then you cling on to your loved ones and the people you come to perceive. All this, when you hold on to them, you suffer, you become afflicted. Why? It is because you cannot understand that they are not what they are, and they don't belong to you. To you, the form and mind is like very real, because you cannot see through the five aggregates of form and mind to realize that they are all empty. That's why the Buddha said, there is this universal characteristics of impermanent, because they are impermanent, they will lead to suffering. Everything will change, no matter how pleasant and unpleasant that state is. They will change, and you cling and attach, and one thinks your way, you will be caught. Suffering will be the result. That is the reason why impermanent will lead. I think the word no more. That's why from impermanent, from impermanent, it will lead to suffering. There is this duality, hence it is impermanent. Condition arising. It is never a permanent unchanging entity that you can hold on to, cling on to, and say, this is me, this is I, and therefore all this can be mine. Just like this body, you can never say to it, please don't get old, don't get sick, and don't die. Because it doesn't belong to you. It's only a condition arising entity, and it goes the way of nature. It cannot remain the same eternally. This one is not your true nature. This body arises due to condition and is karmically conditioned out for you to use. If you deludedly grasp and cling, suffering will arise. This is how you penetrate the Dhamma. This is how you see the unreality of this form and mind, as mentioned in the Heart Sutta. When Kuan Yin Bodhisattva was cultivating the Prajna Paramita, perfection of wisdom cultivation, he illuminated the five skandha and realized that they were all empty because through wisdom he penetrated. He is no longer deluded and he passed beyond all suffering and reached the other shore. All these are found in the teachings of Heart Sutta. When you can trace the origination factor, you will come to realize that it arises through one of your senses, born of wrong view. The Buddha said, when you understand how the unarisen mental hindrance or evil roots or wrong thought comes to be, then when you continue to silence your mind, you will also come to understand how the arisen mental hindrance is to be. Then you will know how to retrospectively reverse it via straightening your view. To do that, you must reflect and contemplate as follows. Why do I stir my mind? How come I have this wrong view? Where does it come from? Then you will be able to trace it. It comes from your conditioning, your belief system, all those things that you come to believe in that makes you like that since young until now. Then you will come to realize that if these are wrong view, then what must I do to develop the right view? How can I develop right view? You have to go back to the teaching by inquiring, what did the Buddha say? What are the three types of right view? Have you cultivated them? They are the three spiritual laws that governs life and existence. The first one is the law of karma, where there is this so-called karmic conditioning behind. That's why there is a karmic obstruction. It will obstruct you. You cannot go beyond. So what must you do? You have to ask for forgiveness. In Mahayana, there is such a thing as repentance or asking for forgiveness. Even during the Buddha's time, the Theravadin also had this chanting, Kayena Vacha Cittena, etc., which is asking for forgiveness from the Triple Gem. But you should expand on it to ask for forgiveness from all beings, that is, whomsoever from the distant past until now, whether knowingly or unknowingly, that this nature of mind had caused any karmic negativity, suffering, or misery, or misled. You would like to sincerely ask for forgiveness, and may this request for forgiveness be accepted by all. You have to do that, otherwise the karmic obstruction will be there. Then when you understand through this nature's law of karma that you reap what you sow, do good because good, do evil because evil. And the fifth of the five daily contemplation we state, each and every one of us, we are all born of karma, heir to our karma, conditioned and supported by our karma. We are what we are because of our karma. We will know how to live life accordingly. So when you have this right view, what must you do? You must take care of karma. Then you realize this is how the advice of the Buddha come about. How do you take care of karma? The Buddha said, keep your precept. Who violates precepts? They are people with the three evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. Then to take care of precept, you have to be heedful. You can never do it if you are heedless. You have to train your mind to be mindful, to be heedful, and to be ever mindful of mental intention behind your action, speech, and thought processes. That's how mindfulness come in, heedfulness come in, and the four right effort come in. That's how Noble Eightfold Path can be understood and cultivated. That's why this law of karma is very powerful. When you have the right view, you don't blame anybody or react to life anymore. Where there are causes and conditions behind everything that arises, as stated by the Buddha. You don't get angry with that person or hate that person anymore. You will come to understand via that right view that whatever they do to you, very likely in the past, this nature of mine must have done this to other people before. That's why now there are causes and conditions for it to arise, and it has to be confronted because all this are karmic vipaka or friction based on the understanding that you reap what you sow, and what you do to others will come back to you and you will become the victim. So you must have this wisdom to accept them all and be at peace with them, then act with understanding and do what you have to do. If need to ask for forgiveness, then tell yourself to determine from now onward, I'm not going to repeat all these wrong things. I'm not going to allow this delusion to continue. I will follow the advice of the Buddha. That's why I will determine to keep my precept from now on. Forgive and forget and move on. That's how you cultivate. Then the second spiritual law is law of mind, citta niyama. After that, we will go into citta niyama, the law of mind, to understand how our mind functions. The Buddha taught us the law of dependent origination, or paticca-samuppada, which is the second spiritual law under this right view. When you understand paticca-samuppada, you will understand how your mind functions. Then you will come to realize that you need wisdom to liberate your mind. Otherwise, without wisdom, the first two links of avijja-paccaya-sankhara will condition you to think a lot. Depending on ignorance, sankhara activity, which is mental thinking, will come to be. That's how you think a lot and become heedless. You will become heedless because dependent on ignorant activity of mind or sankhara arise. If I don't straighten my view, if I don't develop understanding or wisdom, this ignorance will continue to condition me to be heedless, to think. That's why when you have this understanding, you will straighten your view. We are having the appropriate right view. Then you will have fewer problems and less thinking. You will become less heedless, more heedful and mindful. Then you will be able to see things as they are and insight into phenomena to realize the universal characteristics of nature, anicca, dukkha, anatta. That's how that link is weaken. Avijja paccaya sankhara is weakened, and that's how you actually transform. So to trace the origination factor is easy. You know that it is from one of your sense doors due to your wrong view. So you develop right view with regards to law of karma, leading towards acceptance of what is. Then if there is the need to ask for forgiveness, ask for forgiveness. Then vow not to repeat all this karmic negativity, determined to avoid all evil via keeping your precept and cultivate wholesomeness. Next, invoke power of merits and blessing for causes and conditions for you to gain back your good life, so that you can have the condition to cultivate, to move on, to progress along the path of Dhamma. As Dhamma friends, the Kayamita Fund is geared towards this purpose, to help Kayamita to develop the requisite parami and merits for you all to have the good life and good condition to walk the path of Dhamma. Kayamita can also invoke the power of merits for causes and conditions to arise via nature's law for you all to overcome your karmic obstruction and obstacle. It is also for you all to develop the causes and conditions to move on, to progress. When you have done that, you will have to reflect and contemplate on the essential Dhamma to develop the clear understanding of these three important right views, for you to develop the wisdom to overcome your wrong view. How do you straighten your view? Law of karma is one. Law of dependent origination is the second one. So you reflect and contemplate. Why did I stir my mind? Why did I react to what I see, what I hear, what I smell, what I taste, and what I tactically feel to arise the negativity of my state at every moment of sense experience? It is due to my wrong view, self-delusion, or sakayadity. Yeah, I thought it is me. I believe there is a person who say bad things about me. That's why everything looks real to me. But when you have penetrated the Dhamma and realize that they are all impermanent, conditioned arising, dependent originating, no reality, they are only form and mind, not what you think, then you don't take it as something personal anymore. Soon, you will come to understand that all these mind states are only naturally conditioned arising entity that go the way of nature, exhibiting the universal characteristics of nature. So only form and mind arguing with another form and mind, getting angry with another form and mind, developing fear through delusion, sakayadity, and ignorance. So what are all these? You have to reverse your wrong understanding and learn how to develop more and more of this wisdom, not to be deluded by all this, means the phenomenal world of consciousness. Then you need to ask yourself, if all these are impermanent, dependent originating, condition arising, no reality because of the universal characteristics of impermanent, anicchang dukkhang anattang, then how can I develop the right view, not to react? If I don't believe this is me, then there is no more problem. Whatever people say or do is just a condition arising from a mind saying all those things. If you can accept what they do, say or act, then you can be at peace. You have to learn to accept them for what they are, to see things as they are. You have to come to terms with the reality to accept what is. They are just the way they are. When you say accept them for what they are, what does that mean? It means they are the way they are. Means deluded people will say deluded things. Angry people say angry things. Selfish people do selfish things. If they are just the way they are, there's nobody to get angry because you can accept them for what they are, even though you may not agree with what they say or do. The moment you can accept them for what they are and will no longer stir your mind, you will no longer react and blame because you understand this law of karma. Hence, you will accept them completely. When there is complete acceptance, it means you are at peace. No more anger, no more hatred, no more fear, worry, anxiety, insecurity. Then you realize that this is pretty good. This is a pretty good way to live life. Because no more conflict, no more suffering, no more misunderstanding. This is thriving. This is how you straighten your view. When you have straightened your view, then you will be able to respond differently. The next time you see that person or hear or recall those unhappy scars of memory, where there is no more delusion. So this is very beautiful. Huh? When you have straightened your view, then you will be able to respond differently the next time you see all these people. Or recall those unhappy scars of memory, where there is no more delusion. Then you will come to realize, hey, nowadays I don't react like before anymore. Just like some of the Kayamita experiencing all this beautiful mind state. Then sometimes when you see them doing all those foolish things, you will, instead of reacting, pity them. And out of love and compassion for them, you will radiate metta towards them. You may even say, forgive them, for they know not what they are doing. You will follow Jesus' advice. Even when people crucify him, he will not get angry with them because they don't understand the consequence of their action. They are just the way they are. So when you have developed such wisdom or understanding, you can laugh at all these things. Then as you radiate love or metta, if they continue to scold you and you are not affected by it anymore, it means you must have changed. Otherwise, how can you remain peaceful and have the ability to do that? Then you will say to him, it's okay, and thank you so much, or sorry for what happened. If I have caused you any misunderstanding or unknowingly offended you, then I would like to ask for forgiveness. Or in the past, before I knew the Dhamma, I really don't understand all this, and I was foolish. That's why I tease you, I disturb you, I cheated upon you, but now I would like to ask for forgiveness. The moment he hears you say all this, he will look at you differently. Then he may say, it's okay. At that time, I was also at fault. But if you keep on blaming him and arguing with him, he will become more and more violent. He may even beat you up or whack you. So that is life. When you have traced the origination factor, you can retrospectively reverse it. This fourth way is the wisdom way, is the best way. This is applying Dhamma understanding. This is meditation. This is wisdom. Understanding we are seeing things as they are, not reacting, and always be at peace. Then correct your view, straighten your view. That's why listening to Dhamma followed by straightening one's view is meritorious action. If you continue to straighten your view, you will have more and more right view. Then what does it mean? It means you will have less and less ignorance. Then the first link of the law of dependent origination, which is paticca samuppada, regarding avijja paccaya sankhara, gets weakened. Weaken means less ignorant leading to less sankhara. What is sankhara? They are mental activity, mental thinking, emotion, mental state, etc. All this become less and less. That's how you become more and more mindful, more and more heedful. All those that are not worth thinking, you will not think like before. Just like what the Buddha said in the Sabbasavaka Sutta, things that are unfit for attention, you will never give attention anymore. When you give attention, what happens? The unarisen asabab or defilement will arise. The arisen one will become worse. So that is the danger. Then why do you want to think in that way? Because this is unfit for attention. That's why all the reasoning, analysis, no point. The justification, no point. That's why when you have this understanding, your mind is different. You will be liberated. You will be free. You can come to acceptance of the reality of the moment. You can be at peace with all situation, all condition, and all type of people. Then the fifth way, the Buddha said, this is where they must have taken from the text and tell Danny. If all the first four advices that the Buddha has taught you also does not help you, then there is nothing the Buddha can do for you. You have to fight it yourself. So according to the Buddha, he said, with tongue against your palate, you must determine to abandon the unwholesome thought. Which means you must use your sure mental strength and determination to abandon it. And that way, it's still thought-based. Of course, this is also one of the five advices of the Buddha. But how did that advice come about? If this first four ways also cannot help you, then you better don't come and see him. You go and do it yourself. That's what the fifth advice is all about. So if the first four ways that the Buddha has taught you also you cannot do, then no point seeing him. You better do it on your own. So Danny, what did they advise you to do? You told them it is really unbearable, yet you ask, they ask you to fight it, right? That fifth advice of the Buddha is to abandon the unwholesome thought and not to fight all this unbearable mind state. Whatever mind state, whether bearable or unbearable, is decided by who? By the mind up there. And if there is delusion, then you will label it as unbearable and very painful. When you do that, what happens? Pain is a negative aversion or ill will, which is a mental hindrance, which will hinder your mind from entering the meditative state of inner peace and inner awareness. But if you have wisdom, you will be at peace with everything, and you will not label the feeling to arise the duality born of self-delusion. Then there is nothing unbearable. It becomes unbearable because you are deluded. You have attachment to comfort, to good mind states. And you don't want. And you don't know how to overcome it. Just like the law of karma. If you want to have good life, take care of karma. Then karma will take care of your life. That's it. And no more doubt. Therefore, live life in accordance with this law of karma. That's why you do your duty and you will have good life, beautiful life. If you don't do your duty, and when nature's law hit back, then you complain. That is self-delusion. So like what the Buddha said, your life, you decide what you want. Oh, sorry. Your life, you decide how you want to live it. He had already told you under Dhammapada verse 1 and 2. Verse 1 leads to suffering and verse 2 leads to happiness in life. So you have to choose. Pretty easy to choose, isn't it? You want to have the happy life, the good life, what must you do? You have to train your mind to be heedful, to avoid Dhammapada verse 1. So the Buddha said, your mind is the most important entity. For mind is the forerunner of all things. Mind is she. Where mind arises, everything comes to be. So what must you do? If you are heedless, you will act, speak, and think with a heedless or deluded mind that has the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. If you do that, suffering will follow you, like the wheel that follows the hoof, as per Dhammapada verse 1. It is clear that if you are heedless, you will develop evil roots. You will act, speak, and think heedlessly with an unwholesome mind, which has the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. Then suffering will follow you. Most human beings are like this. They suffer a lot. In the second complementary Dhammapada verse 2, again the Buddha said, your mind is the forerunner of all things. Mind is cheap, and mind is very important. Choose to take care of mind. Train your mind to be heedful, to be aware. When you act, speak, and think with a wholesome mind, which is free from the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion, then happiness will follow you, like your shadow that never leaves you. So life is pretty simple. If you want to be happy, avoid Dhammapada verse 1, train your mind to be heedful, and develop all the wholesomeness as per Noble Eightfold Path cultivation. Then happiness will follow you. When you keep your precept, when you have virtue, it is the source of happiness. It is stated in the text. And when you are happy, you will be peaceful. And because of that, precept is a source of true spiritual peace and wealth. It will bring about the understanding of the spiritual teaching. This is how you develop the understanding. Investigate into all things. Don't just listen to what others tell you and get the essential Dhamma clearly understood. Virya is not effort. Virya is a spiritual zeal or tenacity. A driving force that drives you is an energy. It is not directed by the thought. Effort is thought-based. Effort is you want to do something. The one thing is from the thought. Whereas spiritual zeal is the tenacity that drives you. There is no thought involved. It is the understanding. It is wisdom behind. We are understanding the importance of cultivation, cultivating such meditation. And there is no greed, no effort, no determination, no thought behind. It is just an understanding that sees the importance of this practice. When you see the importance but don't practice, then it is also your choice. It is your life. And the decision is yours to make. Sati is for you to see, then develop the spiritual zeal to move. Okay, shall we end? Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Is there any more question? That question by Brother Danny is very good. At least you all can learn from it. And most of it I already explained before, especially the five ways to overcome unwholesome thought. But maybe for the clan group, they have not heard of the spiritual faculties of Virya being explained in this way before. But I have explained it in many of my sharing during the Tuesday, Thursday, and Sunday class. Yeah? So this could be the reason why the clan people, because they seldom attend my Dhamma class. I only go there and give Dhamma talk once a month, I remember, during the early years. There were many years where I was invited to give Dhamma talk or Dhamma sharing by the clan group. Brother Danny, followed by Brother Gan. We will have 45 minutes of silent awareness-based meditation. So this awareness-based meditation is very important. It can help you to understand the third and fourth way to overcome unwholesome thought, to develop wisdom. Where the third and fourth way are meditative way, wisdom way. So silence your mind, maintain awareness, and let everything silent return to its original state. To realize your true mind before the stirring, before it creates sankhara or thinking activity, before the mind stir. awareness before the knowing is the silent mind, the true mind. When you are just aware without thought, that is your silent mind, true mind. That's why relax, maintain awareness. Okay, 3.2. Question by Brother Yap. So Brother Yap asked this question. Brother Teo, if it is virya through thought base, can it be said to be clinging? So I explained. I asked him back. I said, what do you think? If you interpret virya wrongly, yes, it becomes thought based. Virya itself is not thought based. Virya is a spiritual faculty, spiritual zeal, tenacity to move. Virya is a spiritual faculty. So how can it be thought based? Just like sadha, it is faith. It's a mental state. It's not a thought. And then, of course, there is when I have faith in the Buddha, I don't have to believe in the Buddha. That faith comes from understanding. Understanding brings forth the faith. So Buddhist faith, born of understanding and wisdom, is not blind faith. Yeah? So that is a big difference. Because we call it a spiritual faculty. So this spiritual faculty, sadha or faith, can bring forth the condition for you to understand spiritual teaching. Because when your faith is very strong, your mind is very calm and very composed. And that mind can receive spiritual teaching. That's why it's called spiritual faculties. Similarly, virya is also a spiritual faculty, spiritual zeal. So it is not a thought. But if you interpret virya as effort, then it becomes a thought. Yes. Thought-based meditation, the thought wants to put in effort. As a thought-based, you have the four right effort. So if you interpret virya as an effort, which is wrong, then it becomes a thought. And then, of course, there is craving. Who makes effort? There must be somebody who makes the effort to want to cultivate, want to do this, and want to do that. And that is the thought, which is still active. When there is no effort, what does it mean? That's why J. Krishnamurti said, whenever there is a meditator, there is no meditation. And whenever there is a effort involved, there is also no meditation. These are very profound statements. If you understand what is meditation, then you can understand the profound meaning of J. Krishnamurti's sentence. So here, when he say, whenever there is a meditator, there is no meditation, what does it mean? A meditator is a ego, because it means there is somebody meditating. So why could that entity be? If you use thought, then of course there is an entity. The thought is egoic. It has a personality. So thought, which is egoic, can give rise to what we call thought-based meditation. So when the meditator is the thought, how can you meditate? When thought is active, what is thought doing? Thought is trying to note, to focus, to meditate, to concentrate, to do this, to do that. And all this doing by the thought is to create activity of thinking, verbalizing, chattering, concept. There is a doer. There is a meditator. Busy creating mental thinking, mental activity, mental proliferation. So if you are doing that, that is not the meditation as taught by the Buddha. The meditation taught by the Buddha is sati, awareness. When you are aware, there is no thought. So when you introduce a meditator which is thought, then how can you develop awareness-based meditation? Definitely that type of meditation becomes thought-based. That's the reason why J. Krishnamurti said, wherever there is a meditator, there is no meditation. So this is very clear. Then he also said, wherever there is effort, there is no meditation. Effort means what? There is somebody putting in effort. There is something trying, doing through effort to achieve, to realize. So if you do that, it also becomes thought-based. The effort implies an entity that is trying to put in effort to meditate, to do something. Whereas the true meditation is just observation, awareness. When you are silent and just relax and aware, there is no thought. There is no meditator. There is no effort involved. That's why it's effortless. So the true meditation, which is sati or awareness, is without the thought. That's why it is the silent mind being aware, to insight into phenomena, to awaken, to see things as they are. And this is what awareness-based meditation is all about. That's why when it comes to purification of mind, the Buddha never used the four-eye effort. He straight away go into sati, mindfulness, leading to samadhi. So this is how it should be developed and understood. Huh? We go back to the sharing. So these two statements by J. Krishnamurti become clear. Huh? Wherever there is a meditator, there is no meditation. And wherever there is effort, there is no meditation. So what is meditation? Meditation is just silence. There is nobody inside there to do the meditation. It is an understanding and awakening, not through a thought and not through a ego or personality or a person. So this understanding is very important. When we meditate, is to develop wisdom. So meditation, when you understand, is to develop wisdom. It's the insight into phenomena, is to awaken. It is not involving a thought process. So when you understand that, you will be completely different when you meditate. Then thought-based meditation will not trap you. You will not be gullible. Okay? Then I move on. I ask any more questions. So at least the sharing is good. You can ask and you should ask so that you can clarify more of your doubt. Then after that, there is another last question, I think. Question 3 by Sister Ingby. Yeah? So we will read her question. Bratil, from your green book, Who Are You and What Are You? On page 21, Bratil mentioned that this form of mind is non-self, but not no-self. So can Bratil elaborate a bit on what is the difference between non-self and no self? This is very beautiful. This is a very good question. So I will read out the answer so you can develop more understanding. Okay, thank you for the question. People don't understand emptiness. Sorry, people who don't understand emptiness will say everything is empty or kong in Mandarin. If everything is kong and empty, then there is no need to talk about it anymore. But life is not like that. The deep meaning of emptiness is it doesn't mean there is nothing. That's why the understanding or the concept of non-self is introduced. So this non-self is not no self, because non-self is not nothingness. Non-self means it's not a self, but it's very different from completely no self, nothingness. To understand this is not easy. Maybe I will go into it a bit more. I will read on, then hopefully you can develop the understanding. Non-self means this one, the five aggregate of form and mind, is not you. But there is such a thing as a form and mind. So now you see the difference. It is not nothingness. There is something which we can call a human being or a living being. And this is the five aggregate of form and mind. But this one is not a permanent, unchanging entity. That's why it is non-self. Means you cannot say that this is me, this is I. Then this me and the I become the self. But in reality, it's not that way. So the meaning of non-self is very important. So the deep meaning of emptiness is it doesn't mean there is nothing. That's why non-self and no-self, they are very different. Non-self means it is not you, but there is such a thing as a human being, as a form and mind. No-self means one. The form and mind also don't exist. So non-self means this form and mind exists, but it is not you. So that is the difference. That's why the Buddha said, you are born of your karma, heir to your karma, conditioned and supported by your karma. You are what you are because of your karma. Who is this you that the Buddha is referring to? It's referring to your form and mind. And that one exists because that is dependent originating. But that one is not you. That's why it is called anatta, non-self. You can say that this form and mind is enlightened because it is connected to the wisdom born of the direct seeing. That one is an arahant or an arya or a Buddha. But that one is not you. That one which the enlightened ones are not gullible. So those who are enlightened, they will know that form and mind, even though you can say it's enlightened, but it is non-self. It's not a permanent and changing entity. And they will not deludedly cling and grasp and say, this is me, this is I. No, they will know that it's just a vehicle and a tool, karmically conditional for them to come to this existential world, to live life, to do their work, to do their duty, to fulfill their vows, and to go through karmic experiences. That's the reason why the enlightened one, they are not gullible, they were not clean, they were not whole. That in the Diamond Sutta, it is stated that even a Sotapan will not have the thought that he is a Sotapan. They will not arise that thought because they are no longer deluded anymore. They have penetrated the five aggregate form of mind, the mental five aggregate, and realize that they are all conditioned arising entity. Hence, not a permanent unchanging entity that you can cling on to and hold on to and say, this is me, this is I. Conditioned arising entity is just like any phenomenon supported by condition. So how can it be you? It can never be a permanent unchanging entity that you can hold on to and maintain as this is eternally me. That's why the Buddha's deep meaning of anatta is it's not a permanent unchanging entity, because within the conditioned world, everything is conditioned arising. There is no such thing as a permanent unchanging entity that we can hold on to, cling on to and say, this is me, this is I. That's why in the Anatta Lakkhana Sutta, the Buddha asked the monk, is this physical body self? The monk didn't know how to reply. Then the Buddha replied, this physical body is non-self. It cannot be me, because if this physical body is self, it will not lead to suffering. But because it leads to suffering, it is non-self. It is not self. If it is self, then it will be within our power to tell this body it should be thus and not otherwise, because it belongs to you. It is a permanent unchanging entity. But in the conditioned world, this is impossible. Everything goes the way of nature, because everything is condition arising, causal phenomenon. That's the reason why when you meditate, you will see it very clearly within your own form and mind. That's why you will not be deluded by it anymore. Non means there is something, but it is not you. No means totally not there. There is no such thing as nothing or nothingness. In the teaching of Atta, the theory of a permanent soul or annihilism or no self, the theory of nothingness, these are the two extremes which the Buddha said. Avoid the two extremes of Atta and Attaniya, means self and no self. That's the reason why the Buddha introduced Anatta, non-self, as the middle way or in between. There is such a thing as a human being. There is such a thing as a five aggregates of form and mind, but they are impermanent. When you attach and cling, it leads to suffering. That's why it is not you, empty, non-self, not a permanent unchanging entity. That is the real teaching. But human beings cannot understand. They always quote the Buddha, say, anatta, non-self, not me. Then on the other side, he said, I am born of my karma, heir to my karma, supported and conditioned by my karma, etc. So what is going on? But because you cannot understand him, it becomes like very confusing to you. When he said each and every living being is born of their karma, etc., he's referring to the five aggregate of form and mind. That form and mind is subject to karma, follows the law of karma. That is the reason why we are born of it, heir to it, etc. This one goes through karma, and this one abides by the nature's law. That's why one has a duty towards the law of nature. It has to do its duty. You cannot say everything also empty and non-self and not real. Then you can simply do things. No. Because there is such a thing as nature's law, law of karma, law of mind, and law of Dhamma that governs the whole of life and existence. That's why I always said that there are nature's law that governs all of life and existence in this universe. These three spiritual laws governs the form and mind. your life and your existence. That's why every time you come to this world, you need a vehicle and a tool. Means a form of mind which is karmically conditional. So if you don't take care of it and don't accord this one that come. Sorry, I read again. So if you don't take care of it and you don't accord, there's a comma, that's right. This one that come is born of it, heir to it, conditioned and supported by it, will suffer. So all great beings, they will understand this. And because of the understanding, they will know how to take care of karma, to take care of their form and mind. They will still accord with nature's law, even though they have the wisdom of true emptiness of the unconditioned. But they can only have the wisdom and understanding after the form and mind connects to the true mind. Then this form and mind is no more deluded. That's why this form and mind does not suffer anymore. This form and mind can live life beautifully. That's the reason why there is such a thing as life. The Han Sutta make it very clear. When you have penetrated true emptiness, it leads to wonderful existence. In Mandarin, it's pronounced as 真空妙有. And this is what the Buddha Dharma is all about. You need to have wisdom from both the unconditioned and the conditioned world. Then only you can make use of this form and mind to live. Otherwise, you are still one-sided. You cannot break free. That's why the teaching becomes like very difficult to comprehend, like very complicated and very difficult to develop the understanding. Because every time the Buddha teaches, living beings do not understand what he meant, mainly because he teaches from both understanding, the conditioned and the unconditioned. Since he is the fully enlightened one, he understands both sides, but every time living being interpret his teaching or his word, that is where the problem is. The interpretation and commentary can be very confusing. If it's done wrongly, it's just like what I have told Sister Angby just now. If a person has not realized the truth, then it is just like swimming. You have not experienced the buoyancy of flotation, and you want to teach swimming via reading book on Olympic swimmer only, then it is not possible. He may know who are who and how many Olympic gold medals they have received, etc. But he himself has not been in the pool. He himself does not know what buoyancy or flotation is, and he wants to teach swimming. Definitely it cannot be done. If they themselves have not realized that truth, they cannot understand the teaching. They will interpret according to their own wrong understanding based on what they have read from the textbook or the internet. So that is not real Dhamma, born of real awakening or enlightenment. You must have that type of true understanding and wisdom. You must awaken to it first in order to be able to teach and share. It will be dangerous and can result in a lot of karmic consequences when you lead people astray, like the blind leading the blind. The blind himself cannot see, so he tells you to meditate like that, to know, to do this and to do that. He himself is still blind. He himself has not realized Nibbana. He only believes and advises you to do like that, and then tell you one day you can become enlightened. So if you have such people around, and if you are not careful, you will get yourself involved, and you can get involved because in the past, very likely, you were also like him, also teach the wrong thing, also lead people astray, and then they don't know how to come back. Then in this life, you have the condition to meet with this type of people who will also take you to Holland or lead you astray. Because this is what you did to other people before. So karma-wise, you reap what you sow. When you are not sure, please be honest about it. We are informing others that I only share my present understanding based on what I understand. Because I have not understood the Dhamma as yet, or I haven't had clear understanding as yet. But based on my understanding now, I think the Dhamma is like that. Then this is not so bad, and very likely it has very little or no coming implication. But if you don't know, and yet you say this is the real one, and you go and promote it, until it becomes so popular, you would have led so many people astray. Then do you know what the karmic consequence is? Doing good and doing all this are the same. When you just believe and have a lot of faith in doing, you become gullible. When you do all this, this will lead to karmic effect. It's just like doing wholesomeness. When you have a lot of faith and you do it very sincerely, then the karmic reward will be very positive and beneficial. Positive ones are very positive, but negative ones are also same. They are equally powerful. So when you are reborn, you have to repay back equally heavy karmic consequence too. So don't be too eager to share and teach when you are not clear and not ready. But you can share if you can be honest about it. Share whatever you understand, but do not lead people astray. Tell people that at the moment, I only understand up to this level. So I can share whatever I understand. After that, you have to find out for yourself. Then there is no harm. Then people will respect you because you have been honest and sincere. This is why at our Kayamita session, we always call it a Dhamma sharing, because if it's a Dhamma talk, it is one-sided and it can be very dangerous. So in the early years when I was in Brickfield Temple doing the recording for the talk, I heard a lot of funny comments that can give rise to a lot of karmic implication, which they don't understand at that time because of their views and opinion, and they dare to say those things. When you hear them speak out, you will know delusion is not that. When there is delusion, they will speak and comment without noting their consequences. They are so egoic in their command because they try to take sides. They are attached to their methods and technique and their teacher, and only theirs is correct, the rest are all wrong. So if you have that type of mind, you should straighten your view and develop an open mind, because it is very dangerous. It will lead to division, argument, negative karmic consequence, and subsequent misunderstanding and conflict. Having an open mind is very important. If you do not understand, just let things be. Do not comment. If you can understand, then you should rejoice. Not until when you really have the understanding, it's better for you to have an open mind. Because you can never understand how penetrative people's cultivation is until you yourself can really understand. So if you do not have the clear understanding, try not to judge with your limited knowledge or understanding. Please do not react and make all those comments. Okay? So I rejoice, sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Oh, there were three people rejoicing from the audience, sorry. So having an open mind is very important because you have nothing to lose. Open mind means if I still do not understand, I do not want to get involved. I do not want to create unnecessary wrong speech, wrong action, and wrong thought process. And unnecessary conflict or division. I just accept them for what they are. Maybe later on when I cultivate and understand, then I will investigate into all this. At the moment, I just listen, no harm. But if you are very rigid, you will resist. Just like the Zen analogy, if your cup is full, whatever tea pour into it will all overflow, because you say you already understood or you already know. Everything else is not important. When your cup is full, you are not able to receive new idea and new understanding. Means you do not have an open mind. Having an open mind means you listen attentively, no right, no wrong. Then everything. Having an open mind means you listen attentively. Yeah, there's a comma. No right, no wrong. Then everything will just go in. Then you investigate. You screen. If you cannot understand, just let things be. Because later on, when you understand, you will be very surprised. So having an open mind is like maintaining an empty cup. Just listen. When you are ready, you will understand. It will become meaningful, useful, and different. So thank you for the question, Sister Ingby. I also didn't know that it was on page 21. But it's good that she read the book. If you want to understand life, read the green book. The green transcript book on who are you, what are you. It is a very important book. And it's a very penetrative book. That type of Dhamma is very rare in this world, and very few people can explain it to you so clearly. Oh, there's another question, question 4. I think we have to stop, because it's already 5:36. So we stop at question 3.4. Okay, we'll open up for meditation reporting, and at the same time, maybe Q&A.
Mrs. Teo, I welcome Mita the sharing, especially.
Yeah.
为什么好像很 heedless 的, 好像 back to 以前这样。
That's why you are more mindful, that's why you can check.
Yes.
So you are more sensitive, 你看得到了, 你感觉得到了。 Then 你就会去 contemplate 咯, reflect 咯。 Then you will know how to resolve it, not a problem at all. 你不会好像以前这样, 紧张啦, 不高兴啦, then 发脾气啊, 不会了。 That's why it has transformed you, then your sensitivity of mindfulness can help you detect all these things. And you continue, Alicia.
就我想讲的，因为最近一连串的事情了，首先我就割到手，然后我从白石哥跌下来，然后我就觉得，我就要更精进的学习。如果有什么事情发生的时候，我要学习也学习不来了。
The urgency.
对对。然后，可是呢，那个 mundane 的 mind 哦，就很 tricky 了，一直就是他就是让你好像没有心去学习这样子，但你是 fully aware 到的，它就这样 manifest 然后我就可是它里面又有一个 understanding 跟你讲了，你现在的 priority 是去 cultivation， 就来我每天读那个 Bodhisattva Vow 里面讲，
对，
就是你的 main purpose 啊，你来这一趟人间是要去 cultivate 嘛。然后可是那个 mundane 就一直，就是如果你好像你会 distract 你自己这样子， you know， but you're fully aware of course。
Yeah.
But then， 然后我就throw out 这个 question， 为什么会这样？然后他就有一个 stanza 跑出来，然后之后呢，他就整个人又好像静了下来这样子。
哦，杀掉。
就他就很好像就是 back to like before 然后那天 Thursday 的时候，当我早上起来的时候，感觉的是特别的宁静。然后我就第一件事情 as usual everyone were on the phone 啊，看电话
啊，
然后我就 go through 一个朋友的一个sort of like they having the lie dancing, you know. But 我发觉到我的 awareness 是在里面的，在跟他们 you know like inside them, you know.
对，
就是 inside them.
Yeah, activity and movement and your awareness is one. Yeah.
对，我就想原来是这样。
The stability of mindfulness that you have developed. That's why you can be in that state of what.The Buddha mentioned as kaya nupassana, mindful of all the activity and the movement of our kaya internally, means your own movement. Then the other one is externally of other people's movement. That's why we call that specific phenomenal awareness, awareness of all the activity and movement, because your mind has entered sati.And you just allow it to be, it will be silently aware. Then when you have that specific phenomenal awareness, like you are inside that line dancing movement, it is the silent mind that is aware. So that is a very important phase of cultivation. When you can see that, you can see a lot of things. You can insight into phenomena, you can awaken. Then you will come to realize a very profound understanding. Everything has its condition for its movement. Everything is dependent, originating, condition arising, causal. Then all of a sudden, you can awaken. Everything is suchness like that, because it is dependent, originating.Condition arising, cause of phenomena. So that penetrative awakening is for the whole phenomenal world. All phenomena exist because they have this universal characteristic. Then you can see all this movement until one day that nature, silent mind, awaken. Then you like suddenly realize profoundly all phenomena.Has this universal characteristic, then it will be like just what I share with you all. Truth is everywhere. Why can't you see? For those who see, they always see. So what is truth? The universal characteristics of impermanent, suffering state and non-self, anicchang, dukkang, and anatta. These are universal truth. These are universal characteristics.So when you are silent, aware, your mind has entered sati, you can see them everywhere, every instant, every movement. That's why whether it's physical phenomena, mental phenomena, or nature's phenomena, you can see them. Anything perceived verbal by the mind is a phenomenon. So if you perceive any physical activity or movement,There is a phenomenon, physical phenomenon. That you can be aware of your mental flow. That is a mental phenomenon. Because you can perceive them. Your feeling, your thought process, your sankhara, your consciousness, your whatever activity of mind. So all this is very beautiful. Even the moment of consciousness, you are able to be aware. to be with the moment. So all this is specific phenomenal awareness. Then when you start to understand all this, then the five aggregate, the phenomenal world, the physical phenomenal, mental phenomenal, and nature's phenomenal, you can see them at all times, everywhere, in the midst of life and nature. Then you develop clear awakening. That insight, that understanding, finally will arise, will surface. So initially, you continue to observe silent. Don't be too excited about the ability. It is the awakening. When it is stable enough, then when the condition has come about, means everything has fallen into place, then all of a sudden, that silent mind, that awareness, nature within, it will awaken. Then like one day, just whatever phenomena or movement can trigger off that awakening, that penetrative awakening. So this is what the cultivation is all about. When it happened, the form and mind also will not know until it has happened. Then it will know, oh, that awakening is like very penetrative. Then no words. It just understands. So this one is the real awakening, beyond thought, beyond mind. So continue to let it be that mindfulness, that awareness, that ability to see clearly. So during those moments, there is no thought. But please don't become complacent. Continue to diligently develop all this and let it arise. Then later on, when there is no longer so much of this worry, duty or activity to actually trigger off your mundane mind's thinking, or the mundane mind will come back through the back door by telling you a lot of things. So that one you have to slowly overcome them. It's like what Song went through. We have the analysis and the reasoning. No meaning. Well, that is the thought process. So learn to develop wisdom, see things as they are, accept the reality of the moment, then give priority and strive on with heedfulness to train. You can live life, you can do your duty, you can do your work, you can do your career or whatever. You can go about resolving your life activity or situation, no problem. But do it following the Dhamma way, then everything will fall into place. There is no longer like the heedless people. They are too engrossed with the heedless thinking. They are hardly mindful, aware. And a lot of things that goes on in life, they cannot see, they cannot understand. They do not have the Dhamma understanding. They do not have that mind state that allow them to see and to understand. That's why they are most of the time heedless. So for you, Alicia, if you can develop the stability of this daily mindfulness, the mind that has intensity, it will be very useful. So continue with your Bodhisattva vow, daily religious routine, stabilize it. Then whenever the mundane mind try to tell you all those things, be aware, silent. Then you will develop the understanding like what you described just now. All of a sudden, the Dhamma stanza will arise. Then you become peaceful again. You go back to cultivation again. That's why I always say, avoid complacency. Complacency can trap you. Then after neglect for a while because you are complacent, you think you already know what it is, have it, then you do not continue to diligently cultivate that daily mindfulness, the religious routine to stabilize your understanding. Not until it becomes very stable, you will not be able to deal with a lot of habitual tendency, the past conditioning, your views, your opinion, and your habitual thinking or activity. So all this need very stable understanding to root it out, especially your latent tendency, anusaya, and also the asava, all this. Then later on, when you are able to overcome the latent tendency and the anusaya, or what we call latent tendency is anusaya is latent tendency. Asava is the very strong erupting one. So when your wisdom has stabilized, these two can be rooted out. Then when these two are rooted out, the normal defilement got no power over you. Well, the normal defilement is very easy to deal with. It's the habitual tendency, the anusaya and the asava. That one need wisdom, very stable, to root it out completely. Then after that, you can see things as they are. You can accept the reality of the moment. Then your understanding of the teaching will be the one that give rise to all the wisdom that will liberate your understanding. That every moment of sense experience, this yoniso manasikara will be there, and you will know how to deal with life, deal with everything that you need to actually through life, to counter, to confront and to encounter. So all this understanding, not until it has become very stable and surfaced, you still need to diligently continue with the cultivation. Okay, Alicia? Yeah?
Okay, 好 ，Brother Jill。嗯，讲的是，因为Thursday 的时候，就是早上有个那个 experience， 然后 evening 的时候，我跟着 Freddy 出去的时候，就他去买东西，然后我在车上等他，等了很久，然后那个哇，里面那个麦要动了，但我告诉自己那个 heavy duty 啊。那我就告诉我自己 ，Why don't you just take a break? No, like meditate, you know?
Yeah,
okay,
that's good.
对，我就在 relax 我自己，然后就就好像 like 很舒服的，就好像是睡去了这样子。
啊，杀掉。
可是 you're fully aware 的。
Yeah. You will have the ability. Yeah, because your mind has capacity. You can rest and silent and fully aware.
Then after that 哦，他有一就是他 manifest 那个 awareness manifest 怎样讲？就是他给我出来的时候，他就 manifest 给我知道，原来你是这样的，知道这个，就是知道这个怎样讲？就是你出来的时候，你就慢慢出来，它是一个 slow motion 的。
我知道 ，Yes, from that nature you come out. 你就了解那个一切唯心造哦。So,
对，就好像你怎样去知道这个 world 啊，就像
mind is the foreign of all things, mind is she, 就好像那个 Dhammapada verse 1 and 2 咯。Mano is mind, the mundane mind, is the foreign of all things, when mind arise, all things arise.So, 一切为心造成的 So, not real. It's condition arising, cause of phenomenon. It's just consciousness arising and passing away. Consciousness is content of consciousness, which is the five aggregate of form and mind. That's why 一切都是五蕴皆空 So,Heart Sutta is very beautiful. So when Guan Yin Bodhisattva was cultivating the Prajnaparamita Sutta, she illuminated the five skandhas and realized that they are completely empty. That's how she awakened. So, 你如果能够静下去 with the nature, then when the nature come out, you will understand more and more, more and more, more and more. So, based on what you have described, it's very good. Sadhu to you. 还有什么吗？
就是从那个之后，在那个之后，就是 after that, 我的 mind 好像就没有这样会 react to whatever。
对 ，because 你了解了吗？所以那个 sankara 就 feel to have power over you， because 你了解了，从那个 nature 它现起来。That's why everything arise from that nature。那个 mundane mind， 那个creation。So 一切一切唯心造 ，mind is a portal of all things will become more and more clear to you. So this is what meditation is all about. You cannot see that, you do not understand that there is an unconditioned, the true mind. The unconditioned is not a being. It cannot come out and live life. And all this you will start to understand. Well, that thing is just a nature.And it can cease, it can go in, then it can come out. It needs condition for its arising. Then when it come out, the first thing that arises is the awareness nature. Stabilize that, which you have done to a certain stage. Then what you need is to detect that gateway, so that it can actually melt inside and develop more and more stability of that nature.Then that pure energy will do the internal movement. The internal movement to transform your physical body is also very important. But when the internal movement move and transform your body, means when you, the yin yang energy goes through the gateway, it becomes pure energy. Then this pure energy will actually, based on the force support thrust, will do its movement.On the inside, then it will activate a lot of those nerve center. We call it the nadis and the chakra. Chakra are major nerve center. The nadis, they are more important. So as this continue to move, your body become more and more light, and more the vibration become more and more like fine.More and more fine, more and more fine, then it will actually have an effect on your consciousness. Where your consciousness that stay inside this physical body will be affected. But without the wisdom and the understanding, you cannot detect the gateway. Then you cannot go through this, the fourth support. So you need to completely silence your mind, completely no thought and let things be and just stay away at the heart area.Until it detects, then it will have the movement, then it will go in. So that phase, I think you have to move and do it from now on. Can I understand?
Yeah, okay. I mean,最重要就是在 daily 里面哈，我们遇到的人啊、事啊、物啊，能够去
面对，
对对，那个是最重要的，而不是所谓的 experience。
对 ，that is for the living life. And in order for the wisdom to continue to grow and become more refined, consciousness and wisdom they must go hand in hand.Then when you have enough wisdom, you silent, go to the heart area, it detect the gateway, then it will transform the consciousness again. Otherwise, your consciousness cannot go in and become more and more refined because the two has to move together. That's why consciousness and wisdom, they work hand in hand. If you move wisdom too fast,Then consciousness lag behind, then there is a limit to what you can reach. It's just like before I met my last guy, before I detected the gateway before he showed me the gateway and explained to me where it is and helped me locate it. The moment I locate it, I transform further. I move very fast. That's why within 9 months, my mundane mind collapsed and my whole vibration of my physical body, all the nerve inside there, the nadis, the chakra, the parasympathetic nerve, the vibration all transformed. Then when my mundane mind collapsed, the nature shine forth. And there is another phase. That one is normally bodhisattva who walk the path of Dhamma only do. But since you have the condition, you can start doing it and try it out. So continue to silent, relax, then in the form of meditation, stay at the heart area because your mindfulness has stabilized. Your daily mindfulness is already quite stable. Your mind has the ability to enter sati. That's why you can do that already. Then don't try to know, don't do anything, just silent away. Whatever vibration or heartbeat or what arise, be with it, stay there, until you become very quiet. Then one day, when the gateway is detected, you will know because the energy, the yin and yang, the awareness or whatever energy that you have developed, it will melt inside, very soothing. Then like Pucheng say, it's like a tunnel open up. Very soothing, then it just melt inside and going. Then the awareness will know, after that trust, you don't interfere with the thought process. Then just that silent awareness nature, it will know, it will do. It's movement or internal, it will move by itself. So this part, maybe you all listen to it again, it will help those cultivator who has the ability to reach this phase of cultivation. Okay, Alicia?
Okay, as you say, Brother Teo,
Amitabha.
Hi, Brother Teo.
Yeah, Sadhu, yeah.
Just stop.
Oh, today your Sadhu birthday. Sadhu, Sadhu,
Okay, now I'm using my notebook, my handphone, so let me see how it goes.
Yeah, we can see you. We can hear you clearly. Yeah.
Can I?
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Very good. Yeah. Sadhu. Yeah.
Anyway. My birthday today.
Yeah, Sadhu.
So, 65 years already.
Yeah, not young, huh? Sadhu.
So probably 3/4 or maybe 80% of you have gone already.
Correct. 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 If by 80 means almost 70% to 80%.
Yeah. So anyway, time for reflection also. So today, a little bit of reflection.
Sadhu.
Of course, first, gratitude to my mother. Yeah. My father passed away when I was 6 years old, so my mother took care of us.
Sadhu.
Me, my brother, my sister, all that.
So for the last...
He has been taking good care of us, and we grew up well. I think we did justice to her.
Yeah, for all the effort.
I think we were successful in whatever we did.
Yeah, your mom has good parami, fulfilling her duty and did everything so well, and brought all of you up so successfully. That's how she has the reward, the parami. Yeah.
So the part two is, even though I was involved in Buddhism for many years before Brother Teo came in and shared the Dharma with us, we were just doing the basic one like Dana, five precepts, all that.
Yeah.
And that's one part. And then the other part is they teach metta meditation. Pieces of cloth.
We're not sure how they join.
So when Brother Teo came and gave a talk, then I think Sister Ng B was summarize all of that in one hour. That's where the Brother Teo came to our house.
To start your Thursday class.
Even
yeah.
two person also never mind. So that put me on the right path to where I am traveling today. Alright, so hopefully that's the right path to continue, you know, for the rest of my life. So my gratitude to Brother Teo for guiding us onto the right journey and right path. So this is the second part. The third part is that lately, these are COVID times. Times for reflection also. And of course, being with SJB and all, so I still have a big collection of friends, and they approach me, and so and so passed away. Like that day, Alan Heng just suddenly he was just like numb in the leg, you know.
Oh, okay.
You feel numb in the leg, then he went to the clinic, and then he couldn't drive back. Then he contacted another friend. The friend sent him back. That was Monday.
Oh,
and then
okay.
by Thursday, he felt like very unwell, and then asked the neighbor to send him to SGMC.
Oh,
and then
okay.
by Friday afternoon, actually, he came to our Thursday session before.
Oh, okay.
So by Friday afternoon, of Bolia. So, like, I think 63 or 64.
That's young. That's still young.
So lately a lot of these kind of cases where heart attack or stroke or something happens, then go lapse into a coma and then just gone. What type of path that is happening.
Maybe it's the
weather or what. But then the other one is now with so many COVID cases around, suddenly you go for tests. A swab test and they say hey, positive. Then you come for PCR test positive. Next moment the ambulance come and fetch you. Sungai Buloh, and that's it.
you don't
get to see anybody, and then they are gone from there. You know?
That's why I need to
family don't care. Even get to say goodbye. So some of my ex colleague Mekong is like that lah. They just go that way, and then he can be very sudden. So you may have your life planned out and say, I'm going to go for a retreat, I'm going to go to do this, that. But suddenly you step on this express train.
Cut short people's training, people's life.
Yeah.
Then they miss the golden window.
4 days ago, 3 days ago, Thursday morning, suddenly we receive a schoolmate of mine. Penang Grade School.
Oh, okay.
So they found him on the floor of his toilet.
Oh.
And by then, 11 o'clock in the morning, the body is already stiff, so they cannot move him. So they took him for post-mortem, and then from the post-mortem, mortuary, then to crematorium, and then that's it. No funeral, no nothing.
Wow.
So we don't know exactly what happened.
Yeah,
but
that's very sudden, yes.
So a lot of all this, so we may have our plans and we just say that, okay, I'm going to do 5 precepts, retreat, this, that. Suddenly we step on this expressway and then just take us off somewhere
else.
And we cannot control. So which means the urgency to practice.
Yeah, like Alicia, they all mentioned. Even Coaching also, the urgency of cultivation.
We have been learning from Brother Teo. It's like we have go to driving school. A lot of things, but the fact of the matter is we still need to get out and drive.
Yeah. The real test is the driving. When you move around, if you can pass.
Then you find that it's a different scenario.
Yes.
There's a lot of challenges. Suddenly a boy run across the road like Ferrari. Porsche. This morning or yesterday.
Traffic
you can
light.
Jump in across in front of your path.
You
don't know what to do. So now the thing is, I wrote this short phrase that we are in the evening of our life. And the sun is setting very fast. And our teacher, including Brother Teo, has guided us well. But this last portion of the journey, we have to travel by ourselves. And it's dark. We have to travel by ourselves. And what lies ahead, I hope we are prepared for it. So of course it all depends on where you are lah. But if you are in Rawang going back to KL, I think that's the kind of easy, it's a straight road there.
Yes.
But if you are Tapa on the way to Brinchang and Sampo Temple, I think it's going to be tough lah.
Yeah.
So it all depends on what lies ahead.
Yeah.
So hopefully our karma, doing good things and all that will set us
that will support you. Yes.
Yeah.
Then the Bodhisattva vow. Yes, the vow.
Yeah.
Go for the vow.
Wherever we go. Right.
Yes.
Otherwise, what will happen is that we'll have challenging tasks again.
Yeah.
Somebody gets stroke or coma or this or that.
And these are realities. Realities that is happening. Recently, a lot of such cases. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. The last 1 month. Last 1 month. All these are cases happening.
Is it Mi Fong at the back?
Yeah, she can tap out our birthday dinner.
Sadhu, Mi Fong. Yeah, sadhu.
Japanese dinner for
Sian. Oh, sadhu. Yeah, today is special day for Sian, birthday.
So with all that, actually, there's some degree of urgency that all of us must reflect on because this COVID times are actually very dangerous times. So you don't know what will happen. So at the same time, when you drive, especially at night, you need to know whether you have enough petrol. What is your speed? Whether there is enough, the engine is overheating. Then there's a lot of things that you need to have a lot of gauges. If it's COVID, at least you need to check your temperature every morning. You check your temperature. You don't have fever. That's one thing.
Also, gargle.
And the other thing that need to be found is this oximeter.
Oximeter. Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
So this oximeter, like this.
Very useful. Yeah.
But this oximeter is useful, so it gives you a rough idea of what oxygen level.
Yours is very good, 98.
So if every morning your level is 95, 96, 97, then you say, not too bad. If it start dropping 93 or 92, then you say, not good sign. So these are some of the things like the gauge on the car, it helps us. Just look what's ahead.
Indicators.
Especially the COVID. COVID can be very, there's no similar one, it can just go like that.
Yes.
And a few of the friends, suddenly they cannot breathe, and then they call the ambulance, and by the time they get to the hospital, it's already like 90 or 89.
It's already quite bad.
Struggling, and by then a lot of organs already gone. So some of these things are reflection. I mean, when you get old, you look at all this.
The reality of life and existence. These are Dhamma. These are Dhamma. So very good. Sadhu.
It was science. So I don't know whether other people got things to share or experience to share. I think lately, Alicia's brother also passed away.
Suddenly. Yes. That was, I think, last month or what.
Because all these are not planned. That means your business, your bank account or whatever is not properly set into order, and then suddenly it just go like that.
Very
toxic.
In fact, it's quite common. We got news of one of our classmates doing Alastair. Is a primary school classmate. One of the I think 1 year our junior or what, I forgot. He also suddenly landed in hospital and passed away. Zamalek, I think his name is Zamalek. We also didn't know until somebody in our class told us. Then we asked him, is it COVID? He said he also not sure. But he suddenly fall sick then. Admitted, then couldn't make it. It's all around 60 something, around our age. I am older than Sui An, 67. I'm same as Mi Fong. So we are quite blessed. So
like today is
7,000,
nearly 7,600 something.
The figure keep on going up.
We're almost on a per capita. That means you take the number of cases divided by the population. We're almost next to India.
Very high. Yes. Then also, if you look at the way all this pandemic is driving our country and our people, more and more people are starting to panic and have fear. So whatever happens, please remember, do not panic, do not fear. Develop understanding and prepare yourself. Do what you have to do. That's why we should actually thank Sri Anna for giving us such maybe condition to reflect on life and to understand the urgency of cultivation and the urgency of developing right understanding to take care of our health, our life at this point of time. So it's not easy. Then before I forget, I would like to add on this. We all should actually thank Brother Suyan. He did the most. Actually, our Kayamita website and also the activity and all those things is only after Suyan came in. Of course, together with Chin Hao, Brother Teo, Pamasuri, they all. This new batch, they really help a lot. But the main pillar is still Brother Suyan, I remember. He started the WhatsApp, everything. Then he helped to organize a lot of things. And he layers with me very well, very closely. Then he get me to actually help many people. Then he also helped me, those not serious cases, he handled himself. And through SJBA, he helped to do a lot of wholesomeness, a lot of beautiful things. Then later on, Brother Chim also came in when they decided to invite me over to give talk and all those things. I think that was the beginning of the flow of Dhamma and the growth of our Kayamita grouping. And that is already almost more than 10 years already, 12 years already, 2008 I remember. Then
yeah,
we should thank, thank Nico so and Envy for inviting me to conduct the Thursday class. That was already 12 years ago. 13, coming to 13.
13, right?
Yeah, 13 yeah. That's why our gathering of Kayamita also very long. 17 years coming, 2004 until now. Everything is moving. So we like to really express our gratitude and thanks to Suyan, Nipong and family for having helped the Kayamita grouping to be what it is today. So let us sadhu him and Nipong.
Sadhu,
sadhu,
sadhu.
And also, today is very auspicious and wholesome for Brother Suyan. His
Brother
birthday.
Suyan will take a blowing ceremony.
That one he will do with me for don't worry.
No, actually Stephanie sent over the cake.
Oh, sadhu Stephanie, thank you so much. So today I think the fellowship is very good. Then the way Sri An actually put it is very good. The first message is, of course, his birthday to remind him he's already 65. then after that, the mother, the gratitude, and how they became successful.
Yes.
Then the third phase is take care. So first phase is 65 already, urgency of cultivation, everything. And this is beautiful. In fact, a lot of Kayamita is no longer young. So don't take things for granted. Yeah. Amifo want to say something? Yeah.
Okay, a short one.
Brother Theo.
I think though maybe COVID to other people is really big problem, but I think for Suyan and me,
no problem.
It is really a beautiful experience.
Because
We are at home, it gave me a lot of opportunity to do homework.
Partly
because I was traveling a lot before, but now I really follow. I have a routine.
Wow, sadhu.
I I meditate, I have my prayers, I meditate,
sadhu.
Do reflection, just as what Brother Peter taught us.
Yes, sadhu. You will progress very fast after this.
In my daily life,
In
my daily life, I try to stabilize the sati.
Yeah.
I still have a lot of work to do.
But no problem.
That is so beautiful because I'm more aware of my mind. The more I see, the more kilesa I see through the sixth sense. So it's really
I understand. Very good.
How I have the light and the dislike, judgment.
Yes.
Yeah, and that's how I kind of see the anicca
impermanent nature.
Yes, and when I try to cling on to it, I have dukkha.
Yeah, negativity
and
of my state.
You know, Brother Joe, you can talk, you know, that's theory, but
really the actual seeing is different. Itself. Yeah, it's different. Sadhu, good.
And it's like, and when I see it, it's like immediately I have like belief and there's peace.
Yeah.
There is,
that's what Dhamma is.
So,
when you understand yourself, your conditioning, how you stir, how you react, then you understand clearly what that mundane mind is, what that formal mind is. Then you start to develop more and more sensitivity and understanding of your thought process. Then Noble Eightfold Path become clear to you. The user of the form and mind is very important. And the user of thought must have wisdom, understanding. And to have wisdom and understanding, you must do all the cultivation, the religious routine, the daily mindfulness, the cultivation of Avijja Sutta, the 10th step. So all these are connected. The Four Noble Truths is three turning, the essential Dhamma. Then you can start to develop the stability of mindfulness, which is the sensitivity of mind, to observe all this. That's how you can progress. Sadhu to you. Then remember the yellow card, that vow. Go after the understanding. That right view is very important. All the important understanding. Then develop the what they call power of merit, means the strong adhitana to go this way, that by the power of whatever merits may arise a causes and condition for you to develop this ability to walk the path of Dhamma sincerely with all this understanding life after life. Whenever you arise, means choose to come or you have to come, you must have this right view, right understanding. Then invoke all the miscellaneous vow to break karmic obstruction and all those things. Then cultivate affinity with all the great beings. Then perfect yourself so that all this blessing, merits and wholesomeness can be very useful in time of tribulation or when you need them to support your cultivation and to have the good life, the wholesome life. Then if you have planted the seed of Bodhi very firmly, sincerely, you don't have to worry about future life. Your whole existence until maybe later on Sammasambuddhahood is all set. That's why this window is very important. And most of you all have the condition and the understanding. You only need to commit yourself to actually develop the vow, the faith, then sincerely go this way. And it's not difficult. A lot of Kayamita has progressed. And it can be done. They have shown you the way. They have also shown you that it's possible. So you can see more and more. So now, my nature rejoices from what I hear. You have gone into it. So this lockdown is a blessing to many people. In fact, Po Cheng also told us the same thing. the lockdown actually make her very determined. Then the urgency of cultivation, like Sia mentioned, because life is very short. How much more years do you have? Assume we live until 80. It's maybe another 30 more years. 350 more years, more or less. But when you reach that age, you also need to understand our health is no longer like when we were 60s. So as you continue to age, you will develop more and more urgency and understanding. But with the Dhamma, you don't have to worry. That one will protect your life. That one will be a great, what we call, inheritance for you all to actually depend on in future when you need the form and mind to come again. So the karmic nature, the spiritual nature, both cultivate them, stabilize them, develop them until they become very, very stable, very powerful. Then the spiritual faculty, cultivate until it becomes unshakable balance, especially sati, mindfulness. You must determine to do it. And when that one comes, your whole cultivation will take off. And you become a different cultivator, a different human being. And that form a mind which has the ability to be ever mindful, constantly meditating, will become very different. It will progress and it will actually penetrate all Dhamma and develop all the understanding. So thank you so much, Sri An, Mipo, for everything.
Sadhu.
Today is very unique, very special. So thank you. You can continue, Sri An, if you want to. Anything else?
Just a short one, basically, like, for example, if you have planned that, okay, next year I'm going to go America by that's a plan, right? But the thing is that if you are leaving tomorrow morning, and now it's 10 p.m. at night, then you're going to New York and you're not going to come back. There's a lot of things in your house that you say, hey, this one don't want to throw, because I only have a bag of 32 kilo, put on inside the rest. Not important. So suddenly you realize that a lot of things that you are accumulating, you are carrying with you, is not important.
All those baggage is not important. Because sooner or later, every one of us has to put everything down. You cannot take anything along with you. When the form and mind cease, when the breath cease, your identity erased, then who are you? What are you? Then everything you think you own become inheritance, or the law deal with it. So we can't take anything along. That's why the famous saying, Lai Ye Kong, Qi Ye Kong, Namo Si Zu He Bi Ku Ku In Between, Wei Kong Liu Lei. So develop that understanding and actually live your life well. Really live life. No need to worry about all those things that you carry, not so real. They don't really belong to us. The form and mind is a vehicle and tool for us to come, make full use of it. Like what the fifth patriarch told Huining. So these are the understanding. When you have this understanding, your mind is free. Then, like my daughter, they already know, take care of karma. Karma take care of us. We don't have to really worry. We live. Most important thing is live. Like Mipho say, it's a blessing in disguise. So this lockdown is a blessing in disguise. She really have joy, live, and able to do the thing that she has been wanting to do for so long. I remember in the early years, he always tell me, he said, I retire first. He said, whether Sri want to retire or not, up to you. At that time, Sri was involved with SEBA. Then when he heard you and Brother Chin sat down, I think Amy also a lot of joy, you, Mipho also a lot of joy. Sadhu. That's why life can become, very happy. Life can become so much simpler if we don't hold on to too many things. Of course, we have our duty. We play our role. Like Sri Anna now also still very beautiful, even though not fully involved with SJBA. In fact, more time to himself, more time to help other people, Kayamita and all those things, and do the work that he wants to do. That's why every phase you move, you become different. So Mifeng also know, earlier on was career. Then later on, when she retired from career, it's a new phase. Then the time she still travel, then of course we also, as Kayamita spiritual trip, we also travel. Luckily, we have our years, at least 15, 16 years. For you all, Thursday class is about 12 years of very good spiritual cultivation and spiritual trip experiences. So this is a beautiful condition. Then you look at our website, a lot of the photo that we took during our spiritual trip and our meditation retreat, they were so meaningful, so beautiful. When you go through them, the reminiscence of all these things that has happened means you have truly lived your life very well. You never wasted your life. Because each and every of this spiritual trip and retreat and all the activity that we do, the Monday house dana, the Dharma talk, sharing, the website, the activity that we do, I can assure you, money cannot buy. And this type of wholesomeness, you can't find. No matter how many hundreds or thousands of lives you live, you will never have such condition to have such wholesomeness within such short period of 12 years of kayamitaship and cultivation. Really, you cannot find. This is the real gem. That's why every time I look at all these photos and even the album that Pamasuri they all do. We should also thank Pamasuri, Brother Tio Chin Hao, they all, and all those people, and Yun Chan also. So this is a very good understanding where we can really make use of it to reflect, to contemplate, and to develop the memory, reminiscence. At least, as a human being, we had truly lived the noble life, the beautiful life. Yeah. And we have walked the path of Dhamma so well. And these are the very rich years. I used to tell you, one day of any of the Tuesday class, Thursday class, or Sunday class, you really partake in the whole thing, that merge, that wholesomeness. Money cannot buy someone else's mind. You can never get it, even if, let's say, you attend maybe many life of retreat or cultivation, if you don't meet the right one, the one with the true understanding one. Now, many Kayamita start to understand that teaching of the silent mind you cannot find other place. They will tell you about mindfulness and all those things, but the real teaching you cannot find. So these are very beautiful pointers and understanding. And now a lot of Kayamita is starting to develop those understanding, and they have a lot of joy, and they are motivating the fellow Kayamitas and giving each other faith and understanding. So today's sharing is also very beautiful. Mr. Yan, thank you so much for your input.
Hey, Padu, Brother,
yeah, created the condition for everything. Yeah. So we rejoice. So anything else? Sadhu.
That's all.
Then who wants to share? Come. Anybody?
What's that?
Quick one. Anybody? Envy, you want to say anything?
Yeah, sure.
Envy, yes, Sadhu.
Sadhu. Especially give me full, strong, concrete support behind me.
Yes, Sadhu.
To subscribe for the Thursday class.
Yeah.
Maha Sadhu to this beautiful couple.
Yeah.
The two of you. be well, happy, peaceful always, continue to be a strong pillar behind all of us.
Yeah,
Support Varitio and all Kalyamita's spiritual progress.
Thank you so much, Amy.
We were standing at the SJDA there, Brother Teo, you and me.
Yeah, I remember.
Shoe right there. I can still remember that incident.
Yeah,
I can remember.
Okay.
Yeah.
By the way, actually it's 2009, because I remember very well, 2008. December time, the Dongzhi, My mother passed away 2008. That was the Olympic year in China also.
Olympic.
Earthquake also 2008.
Correct.
So our Thursday class started in 2009.
And
then after the Maitreya, instructions, our
I think Amy is correct. He can remember. She can remember.
Okay.
I think we can end. Happy Vesak coming. Do you all want to continue the class? If you want to take a break, you let me know. Are you all involved in Vesak? Do you all need to prepare or help out in anything?
No.
We let our class continue. Because Vesak is Wednesday. So our Tuesday and Thursday, we can go on. Okay, good. Sadhu. So good night.
Sadhu. Bye-bye, brother. See you.
Yeah, bye-bye. And today sharing is very good. Sadhu to everyone who had partake and contributed. Especially Sri An and Mifong. Sadhu. Okay, happy birthday.
Enjoy your dinner, brother Sri An.
Yeah, brother Sri An. Sadhu.
You want us to sing a birthday song to you or not?
You can have it.
Who's that?
We can do it now. Miss Lee.
Happy birthday to you.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to Sri An. Happy birthday to you.
Wait, is Pak Masuri there?
Pak Masuri not there.
Zhao Liao.
Yeah, I think she must be busy with the dinner.
Tuesday is her birthday, oh.
Oh, very soon.
Oh, Tuesday her birthday,
it's 2 days after my birthday.
They are very close to each other. Sadhu. So almost Vesak day,
Vesak
Eve.
I was born on Vesak Eve.
Oh, sadhu. No wonder. Yeah. So,
Tuesday, we celebrate Padmasuri's birthday.
We celebrate Padmasuri's birthday. Yeah, I will end early so that we have more time for fellowship. sadhu.
Okay.
So, sadhu. We will end everything, sadhu.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thank you, bye-bye.